We're fast approaching 25 minutes after the hour. It's a Tuesday morning, a Transcendent Tuesday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a member of the board at Creation Moments. He's a vintner in Garden Valley, Texas, and a biochemist by trade and experience. A lot of time in pharmaceuticals, and he knows whereof he speaks, which is why we talk to him every Tuesday. And we're grateful for your time. You always, somehow you manage to make room for us. That's very comforting. It's even flattering, Don, that you would spend, and it's fun too, you know. We've covered
maybe it's a slow period of time. Maybe that's
the grapes have a slow period. Yeah, well, the grapes are growing, growing like crazy. They need to be trained, whipped into shape.
Yeah, I still see you out there with a whip and a chair, talking to those grapes and intimidating them. And, you know. I can see it now. We usually discuss things like biblical creation and Genesis and how history informs science, and science helps us understand the details of history occasionally. And from time to time, we've talked about global warming, climate change, green energy, and we drift back to that topic today. In fact, if you're interested in following along with us, there is a link in the chat window at brokenroadradio.com. The link is to the article from the Cornwall Alliance that kind of sparked our conversation today. And it has to do with what I could call some of the fallacies of green energy. But I have to ask, now we've got the issue of either global warming or climate change, whatever you choose to call it these days, and then there's green energy. Is this really the same issue?
Oh, well, green energy is going to solve the climate change problem.
Okay.
So, I mean, assuming there is a problem, and I don't believe there really is a climate change problem. But, you know, they used to call it global warming, and then, we're all going to freeze, and now it's back to warming, but we can't really decide. So we're just saying, you know, the climate is changing. And, of course, the climate's changing. The climate's always changing. And so as an excuse, if you will, to put in quote, green energy, and there's really nothing green about it, as we had talked about I don't know how long it's been, maybe several weeks now, we talked about this issue and about how ungreen green energy really was. But green energy is basically, we're talking about wind, solar, biofuels, and of course battery energy. And let's lump in organic farming.
The essence is replacing fossil fuel use, which is the boogeyman in all this.
Oh yes, and Team Biden wants to do this by having 100% hydrocarbon free electricity by 2035, and so we are going to eliminate all fossil fuels, and everybody will have to be on electric-driven vehicles, and good luck for getting into the air with electric-powered airplanes that will take more than one person, for example. He's
puffing a lot of smoke without a whole lot of thought behind it, and how much destruction, if you will, to the economy, to say the least, that would cost, but how much destruction to the environment that would cost.
This is like a Chicken Little syndrome, where it's not based in fact, it's based upon fear and even panic in some circles, to think that we could convert so rapidly and that there is a real need to. This article kind of outlines some of the negative aspects of what would happen if we adopted all these green energy plans. For example, loss of biodiversity, species of animals going into extinction. So you'd think the green people would like to preserve all those animal species. Or changing to organic farming, and how that would require an incredible increase in the use of farmable land, and that is not using fertilizers derived from fossil fuels, for example, or where fossil fuels are even used in the process of creating the fertilizer. This is not a simple matter, but it's being treated by simple minds, it seems to me. I'm sorry about that. Excuse me out there, John Kerry.
Yeah, by very, very simple minds, because, you know, the when we were kind of growing up, of course, there you had this Sierra Club, which was trying to protect the environment, which is a good thing. I mean, we want to protect the environment, and we want to, you know, have trees and forests and things so that we can enjoy and our ancestors can enjoy years and years from now. But this whole program would destroy that because you would need a tremendous amount, for example, of windmills, and you got to place them you know, somewhere, and then you would also need, you know, of course, we need solar panels all over the place, and so we'd have thousands and thousands, if not millions, of acres of solar panels, and the biofuels, for example, you know, the Midwest grows millions of acres of corn, for example, and yes, some of it is used for food, but most of it is used to making ethanol, and then of course that ethanol gets put into your gasoline. Well, you know, the thing that they don't tell you about ethanol as compared to a hydrocarbon is that for every gallon of ethanol that you are purchasing at the pump, you're getting 25% less energy out of that ethanol than you would from a gallon of fossil fuel, of regular hydrocarbons. And that's because ethanol is already oxidized 25%. So you're, you know, you can't oxidize any more than that. And so you get only 75% of the energy out of ethanol than you do out of gasoline. So when they switched over and started putting ethanol in everything, they did not advertise that you were paying more for your energy at that point in time than less. And
not even mentioning that it's subsidized by the government.
It is subsidized by the government on top of that. And so we want to plant more, you know, corn. But now if you go organic, and instead of needing, let's just take a number out of our, you know, instead of needing, let's say, a million acres of corn, now we're going to need, you know, at least 25% more than that, because organic farming, after all, you got bugs that eat it. The crops don't grow quite as vigorously because we're not putting the fertilizer down that they need, at least. And, you know, I'm not against organic farming, and it's a great thing. We used to do organic farming with the small farms. You know, they would have livestock, and they would take their manure and spread it out on the field, and that's the best. They still do that in Europe. That's the best organic farming you can do, and when you do that, you get actually fruits and vegetables that have a lot more nutrients in them, and they taste a whole lot better. So I'm not against organic farming. I'm just against the grain program of saying, okay, we're just going to get all of our energy from doing this organically. And we shouldn't have been doing the biofuels in the first place, because we have, and maybe David could look this up, you know, we have a tremendous amount of fossil fuel reserve here in this country alone, not to mention around the world. I mean, we have, you know, a tremendous amount of fossil fuel potentially, you know, still in the ground, which the government is saying, oh yeah, we have all these permits out there, but they're denying the permits for people to even for the energy companies to even explore now. So if you want to blame somebody for your high energy cost, it is this current administration and the government with their policies, and they've already stated, for example, Biden stated that he wanted to have 100% hydrocarbon-free electricity by 2035, and so all of his programs that have been put into place, or the lack thereof, the cutting off of the of the pipeline and the cutting off of the ability of the energy companies to drill new wells and produce enough energy for us again to be not only energy sufficient, but to export energy as we were doing before this current administration got into the White House. You know, that it's just crazy what they're doing. But so let's just take an example of, for example, the solar panels. It is estimated if we just went to total electricity for all of our power needs, for example, all of our energy needs, then it's estimated that you would need 7.5 billion megawatt hours of electricity by the year for all of the U.S. This is just the U.S. alone. I mean, it's not the world. It's the U.S. alone. You'd need 7.5 billion megawatt hours by 2050. Now, we're currently using about 2.7 billion megawatt hours per year, and fossil fuel is about 80% of that is produced by fossil fuels. So imagine taking away fossil fuels, 80%, and having to replace that then with the solar, for example, or wind, or a combination thereof. Then the number of of solar panels, for example, that you would need is just astronomical, and it's been estimated that you would need 33 million acres of solar panels in order to meet the 2050 demand. Now, obviously, not all the electricity would be produced by solar panels. Some of it would be produced by windmills. But even with windmills, you're talking about thousands of, if not, you're talking, in this article actually has the number, 99 million acres of windmills required to meet the energy demand. So we're not, the scale is just astronomical when you think about it, and that this whole plan is doomed to a failure from the very beginning, and doomed to power outages as
would produce energy for 25% of the time, because sometimes the wind doesn't blow and the sun doesn't shine. I mean, there's that factor too. There's a gap that this doesn't cover.
Oh, but then you have to have batteries, and the batteries have, these toxic elements in them. And so we've got, and last time we talked about how much earth needs to be dug up in order to get the rare earth minerals that are in the batteries. So you're talking about destroying, thousands and thousands and thousands of acres. And of course, we wouldn't do that in our country. We would do it in Africa or Afghanistan, for example, that has a big supply of this. And so we wouldn't see the destruction.
Rebirth of colonialism, in effect.
It would be. It would be. And China is well on the way, by the way, of doing this, because they're doing it in Africa and they're starting to do it in Afghanistan since we left. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be taking advantage of it, because guess who wants to produce all these batteries that we're going to need for this new electric world that we're going to be living in? And it's going to be our friends, China. And I say that facetiously, because they're no friend of ours. China is smart enough to know, to see where all of this is going, and to see where the madness is taking us, and they're going to take advantage of it. And who is going to be, at a loss? It's going to be those poorer countries that need the economic growth, but it will be at a great expense to their environment, and ultimately will lead to starvation in their country not because of the economic growth so much, but because of the destruction of the environment, and they won't be able to grow their own foods because they're destroying it with digging up all these minerals and everything that they need, that the world needs in order to power this electric world that these crazy people have envisioned.
So does it, government has already stepped into this in the United States and elsewhere and saying, this is what we need to do. This is a priority. It seems like that's putting the cart before the horse. Doesn't there need to be some exhaustive public discussion of this whole idea, the pros and cons, that as we do away with the propaganda and start dealing with the facts on the ground and let the American public know what's at risk here? Because I'm not sure they're getting that story.
Oh, they're not getting the story. And as we kind of mused before the program, California, when I was living out in California, they would desperately need new freeways. And they couldn't build another freeway until all kinds of environmental impact studies were done to say, okay, it is safe, we're not destroying the environment. Why, when we are going to build this, four-lane, six-lane, eight-lane highway over here, in the mountains or someplace, kind of away from populated areas. But it would take them 10, 20, 30 years to do that environmental impact study. So what we need here is some folks to, and perhaps Zuckerberg and Bezos, and of course, your friend, the environmental guy who was scaring us that, oh my goodness, the world is going to burn up. We can get those folks together and have them spend all of their money and time on environmental studies to do for each one of these technologies, and then to come back and report to us in about 50 or 60 years their findings. And they would find that, hey, you know what? Drilling a hole and taking oil out of the ground is a lot more environmentally friendly than all of these things that we're proposing. And by that time, we'd be well on our way to develop even newer technologies, for example, in the nuclear energy sector. It baffles my mind why they don't talk, when they're talking about all of these alternative energies, they don't talk about one of the cleanest energies that we have developed so far, and that's nuclear power. For example, there's a nuclear power plant in New York. It's the smallest nuclear power plant in the United States. It is the R.E. Gina nuclear power plant. For example, can generate 4.7 million megawatt hours per year from the smallest nuclear powered generation. Mm-hmm. And so if you just took that scale, which is the smallest one, and said, okay, if we just replaced all of the coal powered plants oil power plants with powered plants with these nuclear plants, how many would we need? And the answer to that question turns out to be 1.6 million of the small nuclear powered plants. And you say, wow, that's a lot of nuclear power plants. I certainly don't want one of those in my backyard. Well, aren't you building all of these solar panels and wind generations out in areas where people don't live? You can certainly build some plants out there, and that wouldn't be a problem. But if you do the same analysis, for example, and say, okay, let's not build a small plant because that's going to scare people if there's so many power plants. Let's build a large plant. So the largest plant we have, for example, can generate multiple times that amount of electricity as the smallest nuclear power plant. And so how many large nuclear power plants would we need the fission variety, because that's the power, nuclear power that we have today, and that's about 240,000. Well, that's a reasonable number of power plants, really. I mean, that's not all that many to meet this 7.5 billion megawatt hour goal in 2050. Now, if you add new technologies to that, and by that I mean, okay, we know that these are fission reaction, which means you're breaking up uranium, you're hitting it with neutrons and breaking it up, and that's what basically is generating all the heat for you. If you did what's called fusion, where you actually take atoms and you push them together, you get even like 100 times more energy out of that type of reaction than by splitting things up. And so now you're down to, 2,000 fission reactors as opposed to 240. Thousand.
Are there fusion reactors in operation now?
There are not fusion reactors in operation because of the amount that we still haven't learned how to contain the energy yet in the reaction. Mm-hmm. And so while it's still in the experimental, stages and probably will be for some time, working on that type of problem seems to be much more potential for having a lot of fruit to, from it. And we could spend our energy dollars, for example, or our research dollars a lot better doing something like that than plowing up all of our potential farmland and everything. Now, another thing that this article... so that's on nuclear energy. They never say anything about nuclear energy. Mm-hmm. Another aspect of this is biofuels. We spoke a little bit about that with the ethanol. But there's also part of the plan is to use more wood pellet fire plants. So instead of using coal, we take trees, we make pellets out of the wood, and we kind of compress the pellets so they're clean burning. It's the same type of pellets used in, for example, these pelletized barbecues that you can get at Lowe's or any other hardware store, your Home Depot. They have these type of things, and so it's the same type of thing. It apparently burns a lot cleaner than coal does and a lot more efficiently. I don't really see how that's possible, but they're saying, okay, it's not fossil fuels, it's renewable energy because we can plant more trees. Well, let's look at that. For example, there is a power plant in England called Drax Power Plant, which is one of these pelletized power plants, these three pelletized power plants. Now, to run this power plant for 1 year, it requires 300 million trees to run one power plant for 1 year. Okay, so what effect, and they don't seem to answer this question, what effect does cutting down 300 million trees just for one power plant has on the environment? Well, okay, you're cutting down trees. We can replant trees. You cut them down and you replant, you know, within a year. And it only takes 50 years to replant the forest. Yes, exactly. It takes 50 years to replant, to get your trees back so you can cut them again. So you've got to, you got to do this in various areas 50 times for one power plant. Okay. Well, that means, so we're cutting down 300 million trees per year, essentially. And for that one power plant, that would mean an increase in CO2 of 7.2 million tons of carbon dioxide. And why do I say that? Well, you know, trees, like any green plant, absorbs CO2. And those 300 million trees then would have absorbed 7.2 million tons of CO2 per year, but we cut them down so they no longer can absorb the CO2. So we are increasing the CO2 concentration in our atmosphere by cutting down the trees. And so, you know, as I said, it takes 50 years to regrow the trees. But, okay, let's use on an average about 20 years, and because as the trees are growing, they're starting to absorb the CO2. So let's just say, you know, to kind of wrap this all up, it would take, we're losing the absorption ability of those trees of 144 million tons of carbon dioxide that would have been absorbed, that's not being absorbed. So, and that's just for one power plant. So if you multiply this by thousands and thousands of power plants, you can see the magnitude of effect this would have on our environment.
Sounds rather counterproductive if global warming is your thing. And you know, there's another aspect of oil that is not talked about often. We always connect it to gasoline and powering automobiles, but petroleum products are used in plastics and in fertilizers, and natural gas is used in the manufacturing process of so many things that we enjoy and use and need. If it were to just disappear, we would be in a real hurt. And now we're talking about economic depression. There's nothing to buy.
That's indeed where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did you want the answer to those questions that you were asking me earlier? You gave me an assignment. You gave me an assignment.
Yes, and, sir.
And the answer is we don't know. And that's the interesting answer.
You scoured the internet, and the internet said we don't know.
We don't know. Well, I'm getting a lot of different answers, and the answers are all in trillions of cubic feet.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting part about all of the totals that you get from various and sundry websites about how much what kind of fossil fuel reserve there is. The total natural fossil reserves have increased over the last 20 or 30 years. From 1985 to 2017, they've gone up by four times because exploration is so inventive. They're finding
we can find more of it.
You can find more of it in places you never even thought to look for.
And technology can produce it more efficiently than ever before.
Yes, and fracking is a great idea. I mean,
cleaner, part of that. Cleaner at the same time. It's not the same business it used to be. Lots of changes. Lots more we could cover, and probably will at one point or another here as we talk with Dr. Don on future Tuesdays. So the fallacies of green energy, worth a serious look by somebody, maybe us. And we ought to talk about what we find there. And we've done that this morning.
We might be it. Nobody else seems to be.
That's true. Kind of got carried away with their ideology. By the way, I want to recommend Creation Moments to you. CreationMoments.com is their website. They are a reservoir, a resource for scientific information that speaks to the biblical story of creation. You'll find it a great place to visit and gather information because it tells you how to equip yourself to argue for that biblical story. It makes great good sense, and it's science and history hand in glove. Take a look at them, creationmoments.com. Don, thanks so much. We will talk to you again in a week or so. Appreciate your expertise here.
All righty. Well, thanks for having me, and it's been fun again. And we hope you folks have a good week.
Bye-bye.
Always a good time, Don. Thanks.
So long.
Yeah.